thinking I'm ready to go. Go! Because my heart starts thumping when my legs get too pumping. And give me plenty of space. Hey! Don't try me with your motor car.
Welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. My name is Ifni. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR on your radio dial. This is a show about bicycles and, all sorts of things. Wheels, brakes, cantilever, brakes, as well as anything else you want. We are going to be talking today about something which actually touches all of us. Hopefully never, but sometimes it does anyway. Bicycles and the law. So we're going to be speaking with famed bike lawyer David Hay a little bit later in the show. Also, we're going to have one of my favorite people in the Lower Mainland. His name is Jack Bates. Master Jack Bates is going to be on the air with us. And, of course, my name is Ifni. I will be your host to the world of bicycles and Vancouver for the next hour. That was a song. Actually, we're going to have all these, like, law and judgmentally themed songs today. So that was a song called Judgment, and it comes off a great compilation. It's an anthology of American folk music. That was Sister Mary Nelson, and a track coming from us, coming from 1952. So, again, happy Bike Month, everyone. We're partway through it. We're not done yet. And if you do want to see what events are going on in the city, you should go to best.bc.ca, or you can join the Velo Love mailing list. Go to velolove.bc.ca, or just do a search under Velo Love mailing list. And I want to give you a couple of heads up about a few events coming up. There are tons and tons and tons, so I'm going to restrict myself to a few that I think you may not have heard of through the regular channels. Also, throughout the show, if you want to phone us, you can. It's 604-UBC-CITR. And that'll get us in the booth here. So coming up, actually, tonight, there is a public panel with Naomi Klein. The Shock Doctrine. That's the rise of global capitalism. The quote here is, "Information is shock resistance. Arm yourself." Local grassroots activists will join Naomi Klein in an educational panel event, and that's going to be happening tonight, as I mentioned, at 6:30 at the Maritime Labor Center. That's 1880 Triumph Street, just north of Powell, just west of Victoria Drive. The tickets are by donation. Suggested donation is $10 to $20. Ooh, I'm not supposed to say that on the air. You'll have to find out at the door. So you might want to come early for seating, and if you want more information, you can phone 778-885-0040. I should also mention that upcoming is a workless party. These are very happy highlights of the year. They tend to throw really good parties. That's going to be happening at the Japanese Hall, which is 487 Alexander Street, on Saturday, June the 28th, at the Japanese Hall. There is a very strict dress code. Strict dress code enforced. We require partygoers to come in their most formal, freaky attire. Carnival style, workless party style, dirty and classy. Freaky and friendly. Shake her up. So you might want to have clothes that allow freedom of movement, because there will be DJs, lots of, all sorts of music, body art, yada shmada. So, and again, that is coming up on Saturday, June the 28th at the Japanese Hall. And they need volunteers, by the way. You can email Jessica at worklessparty.org. Also coming up is, I'm doing this in no particular order, Friday, June the 20th from 8 until late. There is a Gateway to What? A party. And this is, of course, being co-organized by the folks from gatewaysucks.org. It's a free outdoor party. It's going to be at the home of Brad Major, which is 11059 River Road. That's in South Delta. And he is a firefighter and environmental scientist whose historic fishing home in a gorgeous leafy ravine right on the Fraser would be paved over by the South Fraser Perimeter Road unless we party until we stop it. So it's going to be a great event out in a beautiful location. The Wilderness Committee has organized a bus to take people out. So if you are in the Vancouver area and you want to attend and you want to be chauffeured, you can go from Commercial Drive. Everybody's meeting there around 8:30. You're going to need to contact Ben at ben@wildernesscommittee.org if you want to confirm your spot. And there will be music out there, live music. It's going to go rain or shine. There's going to be food and drink by donation. Also Lucha Libre, the Mexican wrestlers, are going to be doing an encore performance of their piece entitled The Gateway Struggle, which debuted at the Car Free Vancouver Festival. And speaking of which, what a great event this last weekend. For those of you who may have missed it, please come out next year. And for those of you who were there, it's very important that we give the city some positive feedback. Let's do praise and positive reinforcement. So you should take a moment to send an email to the mayor and city council. Their email address is mayorandcouncil@vancouver.ca. And just let them know that, you know, if you like the event, let them know that you want to see it happen again next year. Of course, right now they've got feedback, but it's mostly from the complainers. So make your voice heard. There are two more events I want to mention. One is a documentary film that's going to be showing called The Long Road North. And it's about a gentleman named Gwendol Castellan. You may have heard about this movie already. He actually wanted to fly to Patagonia on a bike, and once he got there, ride a bike that he built. He wanted to ride from the southern tip of South America to the Canadian Arctic. And actually, before he, it's interesting we're doing bikes in the law today, because just before he even started, he got hit by a car in Vancouver, and ICBC gave him a settlement. So he actually was able to buy a digital video camera and headed to the southernmost place on the planet with a road and started from there. So there's a documentary about his travels. You should definitely... Oh, do we have Gwendol on the line? Hey, neat. Wow. Everybody, see? The collective unconscious. Okay, let's put him through to the board. He can tell you for himself. Gwendol, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Were your ears burning?
I don't know. I called it the right moment, I think.
Definitely. We were just talking about you, and I haven't even gotten to mention the time and place for your film, but do you want to talk a little bit about the movie?
Sure.
Yourself? Okay.
It's called Long Road North. It's taken 5 years to make. In January 2004, I started out at the very southern tip of Patagonia and started cycling north until eventually 19 months later I reached Inuvik at the very end of the Dempster Highway in the Canadian Arctic. So that was the expedition itself, and throughout the whole thing I was filming. And then the last 2 years I've been trying to put a film together, and it just was finished 3 weeks ago for the Duxa Film Festival.
Well, congratulations. Now, I think we should have you on a show and give you a proper interview one of these days. Would you be up for that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Awesome. One thing I wanted to ask you that's topical, because we're doing a show today on bicycles and the law, can you talk briefly about your accident that, you know, you got a settlement from ICBC about?
Oh, yeah. that, unfortunately, didn't involve a bicycle. It involved a scooter.
But okay.
Accidents, the law, bicycles. Unfortunately, it's the law of the larger vehicle that usually wins. And with a scooter, it's the same thing. So.
Oh, dear.
you definitely have to be careful.
Okay, excellent. Well, listen, so folks, then let's talk about when your show, when your movie is showing here. It's going to be at the Ridge Theater, which is 3131 Arbutus Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fundraiser for the VACC, the Vancouver Area Cycling Coalition.
Yeah, it's great to partner with them and try and get as many people out to see the film. It seats almost 500 people, so there's tons of room.
Okay. Are you going to be there as well?
Yeah, we'll be there. Myself and my partner, Tanya, who took part in the expedition from Bolivia to the north, as well as the director and editor who helped me make the film after we finished, Ian Hinkle. So we'll be there to answer questions and just talk about things that people think about when once they've watched the film.
Wonderful. Well, I'm totally going to hold you to your promise to come back on the show with us, because I have all these questions I want to ask you, and I'm not going to allow myself that luxury. Thank you so much for this. And if people miss this film, will there be other showings, or is there a place to buy it?
Yeah, I'm in the process of making a DVD, so they can go onto the website at www.longroadnorth.com, and there's a button to sign up to buy the DVD, and then you just get on the mailing list, and then I'll contact you when they're ready to ship.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in, Gwendol.
You're welcome.
Right on. Ride safe.
Thank you.
Okay. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
That was neat. How dynamic. We're dynamic. People are listening to the show, and it's not just my mom. Okay, so one last announcement that I would like to make, and then we're going to listen to a little bit more music, is to mention that, of course, the biggest bike ride of the year, and one of possibly the biggest rides in the world, if not at least one of the biggest rides in North America, is coming up at the end of this month. The last Friday of this month is, of course, going to be Critical Mass, and the June Critical Mass in Vancouver has traditionally become the ginormous Critical Mass of the year. So that's June 27th this year. People will be meeting at the Vancouver Art Gallery between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, and there will be thousands of them. So if you have been riding regularly, or if you have your bike covered in dust in the garage, get it out, give it a tune-up, and get on your bike. This is a day to get out in the streets and show everyone how much biking can change the future of humans everywhere. Please, all of us, let's remember some of the conventions of Critical Mass. Let's all try to stay together. Let's all wait for the ride behind us instead of charging ahead. And let's all please take care of one another. Do please also, everyone, give some love to the motorists who are trapped in their cars and do not yet know how to escape. It's important that we live by example and show them how fun and exciting solidarity is. So don't forget that not everybody's enlightened yet. It will happen. So anyway, we're going to listen to another track of judgmental music. Here is a song by Papa San and Lady G called Legal Rights.
Me have my legal rights, you know.
Well, Papa San, me have my own too.
Well, all right. Some of the evil. Come. Now hear this. Me cry.
Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you. Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Come, Lady G, you want me sugar plum? Would I give you anything to make you have fun? But if you cheat from me, if I try, give me money, mother. Lick where you get your half body broke down, mother. Swell up your eye, lick your dung a gong, lick out your front teeth and lick so a gum. Put your bad lip, tie you up in a big sun. Don't give you no food, make your tongue long down.
Hey, Papa San, when you're ready, you feel come. Any time you lick me, your days would have done. Me have a police cause, we live in Kingston, a mother. When go for him, I make him shoot to dog and make you feel it 357 magnum. As much as you attack, you would have tried play dumb.
You think a police alone have gun? You never take a look up at the bad boy in one. Then you kind of gun, you know they are jammed down. When policeman see it, sometimes them have to run. They pipe business, me no in a it.
But if me take it and shot you with it,
hey, just mind how you walk, talk to me.
If you no like it, try a bite it.
But me no dark figure bite nobody.
So you feel like you favor jinx it.
Me know this some idea you are getting lazy. You stop wash me clothes and you left them dirty.
So if you work and you not mind me, and you rest a girl, you a give you money. Them a suck out your yaya, yeah, you not notice it, that why. Suck out your pocket just like a sweetie.
Hey, you know what? Make me stop talk. Your uncle make big man a get dark.
Excuse me, give me where make me pass. Me a go phone for me man a New York.
But see ya know, the argument start. Me want fi know what push man you attack.
Left me business, you know you're too fast. Go and go watch your naughty sweetheart.
Come.
Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you. Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Hey, you want fi me 8 and a half. And you don't know which you wanna with your boss.
Boss the Ubers for your rolling calf. You must have boss for your girl a Glengarf.
That a oh.
You don't know where me attack.
No, that a oh.
You don't know where me attack. You fussy foot girl, we can't wear shorts.
You know what? Me and your left. You this a run for me life to worry.
You must think you go worry and fret. Cause when me want, yes, me already get. You buy me a bed, you buy me a buffet. Stocking and shoes and no pretty dress.
Hey, hey. But you not done talk what you get. You never know, say one more thing left. And the soon start show up on your breast. And the belly will not start show yet.
Oh, you know, and a jacket you again. You think how you wanted a pick me guinea?
Oh, yeah, when the band, we will take a blood test. And if a jacket, we will pray for the best. Come,
man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Hey, hey.
Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Hey, me notice you not do no respect. You must take big man, keep up it.
This is me, darling, look how you are sweat. Come me darling, a joke me a me.
So come.
Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Hey, hey.
Man have a right to, man have a right to. If you don't hurt me, me not go hurt you.
Come lay a DJ you and me sugar plum plum. Would I give you anything to make you have fun? If you cheat from me and never try, give me money mother. Lick where you get your half body broke down mother. Swell up your eye, lick your tongue a gong. Lick out your front teeth.
Welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, 101.9 FM, and my name is Ifni. I'm going to be talking, as I mentioned, to one of my favorite people in the Lower Mainland, and there's a lot of land and a lot of people there, but he's one of my favorites. His name is Jack Bates. He is a computer programmer, Google darling, tall bike strider, director of Free Geek, member of the Margaret Charles Chopper Collective. Jack?
Oh my gosh, Ifni, it's so nice to talk to you.
How are you today? Did I miss anything? What else about you should tell people?
I'm pretty speechless and flattered. thank you for your introduction.
What are you doing? Where are you sitting? What are you looking at right now? What's your view like?
My view is into a monitor and the alley beyond. I'm in New Westminster today, writing free software.
Ah, that's kind of sounds like a worthy pursuit. You live in a wonderful co-op.
It's true. I live with 20 people in two adjacent homes in New Westminster, and we all share one enormous gas range and kitchen.
Mm-hmm. And the home, the houses themselves have a bit of history, do they not?
Yes. The Campus Residents Cooperative Association, or campcoop.com, was established in the 1960s as a free university and later as a student residence for students attending Simon Fraser University.
Hmm.
It's been a housing co-op ever since.
Sounds like there were hippies involved.
lots of great stories. 45 people living in two houses, eating rice and lentils to pay off the mortgage so that I could enjoy the cooperative communal living experience. Mm-hmm. 40 years in the future.
And the houses are quite beautiful, and they're situated at the top of this legendary hill.
Yes.
What do you figure the incline is on that one?
That must be a good 50 or 60 degrees, if any, at least. It's barely possible to ride from the SkyTrain station on Columbia Street
mm-hmm.
To my house up 6th Street in New Westminster
mm-hmm.
with a geared bike and without gears. Well, you know, you'd have to be Ifni LaChance to make that hill.
No, I can only do it with gears. And there's lights on that hill too. So if you don't make the lights, if you even hesitate to think about anything other than going up the hill, you're lost.
Yeah,
you have to get off and walk.
Yeah, you're down the hill and into the Fraser.
Well, anyway, I'm really glad that you've joined us. And maybe we should mention why you're here today.
I'm here speaking to you, Ifni, because I was run over by a minivan riding my bicycle in February 2006.
Mm-hmm. And so folks out there may have seen Jack either on the road or on bike rides riding this pretty rad hand-cranked bicycle.
The hand job, the hand cycle.
The hand job, as it's colloquially known, driven by Master Bates.
That's right.
So do you... I'd like you to kind of give people a sense of what happened and also your experience of going through the legal system as a cyclist and as maybe a first-time cyclist going through that experience. Hmm. Do you want to talk about that, start anywhere you want, and tell us anything you think is relevant or notable?
Yeah, it's a long experience, actually, Ifni. The experience was ongoing until February this year,
mm-hmm.
When I settled with ICBC. I was riding my bike on Broadway, and I was crossing Broadway at Commercial to get to the SkyTrain when a minivan... came through the intersection and ran me over. I had a broken leg for 4 months and a head injury. So I don't actually remember what happened. Woke up in an ambulance in the hospital. The bike that I was riding is bent. You can still kind of see the front of a minivan in the profile of the bicycle.
Wow.
And the helmet that went into the windshield is smashed into a lot of pieces. So I know there's a lot of
relics? physical?
Injustice in forcing cyclists to wear helmets but not installing airbags on the exterior of vehicles. Protecting the driver, but not the pedestrian or cyclist who's more likely to be injured. But I do think that my helmet saved my life, and if it didn't save my life, it saved me from vegetation. Mm. I was bedridden for several weeks after the accident, and so I retained David Hay, who is a great bicycle savvy lawyer, and I'm really glad that I did, because it would have just been very challenging for me to do all of the things, make all of the appointments, and do all of the paperwork that's required after an injury, after an accident.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention dealing with the physical aftermath yourself.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned airbags on the outside of cars. I ran across a while ago an article about a prototype for cars that are actually cushioned on the outside, and they can sense when they're near other things. The photos are, they look like big white pillows.
I think it's great. I think it's completely necessary, and I've heard that. I think I actually read it in a local mainstream newspaper that there's legislation proposed in Amsterdam or in Holland, where they have more bicycles than cyclists.
More
requiring
bicycles than
cars to have external airbags.
They have more bicyclists than motorists?
Sorry, I heard a quote, something like 18 million bicycles in a country of 16 million people.
Oh.
Is that true? Is that even...
I don't know.
Is that even possible?
It sounds
good.
Maybe I'm
thinking of just Amsterdam instead of the whole of Holland. Anyway, that's what I heard. So, yeah, airbags on the outside.
Now, I want to ask you how you acquired your hand job.
A hand job? Well, I was bedridden for 4 months, if need.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a driver's license, but I choose not to drive. And I had a broken leg, so I couldn't have if I wanted to. I suppose, public transit is an option, but for my freedom of getting around, I really counted on my bicycle before the accident, and it was sorely missed during convalescence.
Mm-hmm.
So I had heard of these hand powered bicycles. I've seen them around. I made some inquiries. I asked David Hay, my doctors, the doctors that I was seeing for recovery, where I could rent a hand cycle, and I rented it from Advanced Mobility. They're on Boundary Road between Burnaby and Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And I rented it from Dave Elder. Was a little bit pricey, but the cost of the hand cycle was eventually recovered in my settlement with ICBC.
Mm-hmm. And what was the rationale for that being covered?
How was I supposed to get around?
I mean, I agree. But I'm also wondering, because I know ICBC is often very driver or motorist oriented.
Right. I think as a driver, if your vehicle is damaged, you often get a get a courtesy car.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's covered.
So this was a courtesy hand job.
The courtesy bike, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I think a lot of independent living aids are available to all people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think cyclists are exempt. The hand cycle when your leg is broken makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly seeing you when you first started riding the hand crank bike, and of course you are using a totally different set of muscles in it. I remember kind of watching your muscle curve, like as you developed the muscles in your arms more. Because at the beginning, I remember we would give you a bit of a push when we were on an uphill.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anthony.
And I remember you had your crutches kind of strapped to the back. So it was this really, for me, it was always this really beautiful and poignant image of somebody who was in motion, loving what they were doing, and still, you know, committed very much to you know, wheel transportation, but also, you know, it took a bit of effort and maybe a bit of getting used to.
Yeah. Not quite the man in motion there. I thought when I got the hand cycle that I'd be hand cycling around Vancouver in no time, the first time I tried cycling from my housing co-op at the top of the hill to the grocery store, I was surprised at how difficult it was. I managed to get around, you know, with a combination of your arm strength and your sort of core strength. You can sometimes, grab the cranks real tight, and then use your abdominal muscles to push your body around the cranks.
Mm-hmm.
It was very challenging. I never made that trip to Whistler that I'd hoped on my hand cycle.
Mm. Wow, what kind of reactions did you get from people? When you were on your hand crank bike?
I think encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Were people surprised? Did they kind of see, because I would imagine even for the drivers, they would see crutches before they would see you.
Yeah. Definitely needed to have some high visibility on top of those crutches because you're pretty low to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In one of those hand cycles. I like to think that drivers were even more respectful of a hand cycle than they should be of a regular bike.
Mm-hmm.
Giving a little bit more distance, a little bit more space. I'm not sure if that's actually the case. I think it was about the same. It was about the same vehicular intimacy as biking around Vancouver.
Okay. And Jack, do you we're going to get on to talking to David Hay here, but do you have any parting words you'd like to say about maybe what you learned from the whole litigation experience, or anything you'd like to pass on to people who maybe may find themselves in a similar situation?
Definitely speak to a lawyer. I learned a lot of things about the process. I think riding a hand cycle was a very enlightening experience. Hand cycles are often not meant for getting around, so some modification was needed to get a rack on the back in order to carry crutches or carry a backpack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. You feel good?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
It was wonderful talking to you, Ifni.
Okay. And please give my regards to that hill.
Will do.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jack. We'll talk to you soon. That was Jack Bates talking about his experience. And we're going to be talking to David Hay here in a minute. Before we do that, I'd like to play a track called Snoop's the Lawyer from 1920 by a guy named Maurice Burkhart.
Way out in Reno, Nevada, where the romances bloom and fade, there was a Philadelphia lawyer making love to a Hollywood maid. Come love and we'll go rambling down where the lights are so bright. I'll win you a divorce from your husband, and we can get married tonight. While Bill was a gun-toting cowhand, 10 notches was carved on his gun, and all of the boys around Reno left Bill's Hollywood sweetheart alone. One night when Bill was returning from riding the range in the cold, he thought of his Hollywood sweetheart. Her love was lasting as gold. He drew near to her window, two shadows he saw on her shade, was the great Philadelphia lawyer making love to Bill's Hollywood maid. The night was as still as the desert, the moon hanging high overhead. Bill listened a while through the window. He could hear every word that they said. Your hands are so pretty and lovely, and your form is so rare and divine. Come go back with me to Philadelphia, we'll leave this wild cowboy behind. Now tonight, back in old Pennsylvania, amongst her beautiful pines, there's one less Philadelphia lawyer in old Philadelphia tonight.
Welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. My name is Ifni, and that was actually Woody Guthrie, playing a song called Philadelphia Lawyer. And speaking of lawyers, of course, we are being joined by one at the moment. David W. Hay is a litigation lawyer and partner at RBS Lawyers, and in some circles, he is known as the bike lawyer. David, can you hear me?
I sure can. That's my favorite Woody Guthrie tune, by the way.
Really?
Oh, I love that tune.
We seem to be facing a lot of synchronicity today. I had no idea. we just finished talking to Jack, one of your former clients, about his experience and all about his hand crank bike and things like that. I'd like to ask you a few questions. What do you do in a case where a bicyclist doesn't remember the accident? What kind of challenges does that create for you?
Well, it creates a lot of challenges. The first thing you look for is independent evidence. Failing that, then you look for circumstantial evidence, what we call circumstantial evidence, physical factors and that kind of thing. In his case, I think his last memory was leaving the swimming pool, so that's pretty profound amnesia. And in those cases, of course, and in all cases, really the plaintiff or the person bringing the claim has the onus of proof. So, they face the ultimate risk of non-persuasion if they can't marshal enough evidence to tip the balance in their favor. So he because he had no memory, one of the difficulties we face in cases like that is just sort of discharging the general onus on a plaintiff to prove the case. I mean, one of the ironic features, though, when you have no memory, at least no one can sort of attack your credibility or go after your own reconstruction of what happened because you have none. So,
mm-hmm.
that is an interesting feature in cases like his.
And how relevant does it tend to be? You know, I mean, Jack was wearing a helmet, but if he hadn't been, how relevant would that be to ICBC or to a court?
Well, when you bring a claim in negligence, you're making a number of allegations against what we call the tortfeasor, or the person that is responsible or liable for the negligence. What happens in cases where people aren't wearing helmets or seat belts is that you face an allegation of contributory negligence. In other words, the other side against whom you're leveling your allegations will say, well, we may have been negligent, but even if we were, you contributed to your own injuries by virtue of your own negligence. In helmet cases, typically, in the serious, you know, brain injury cases, there's always a recognition that, you know, the use of helmets will reduce injury severity, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take away the fact that the accident was caused in the first place by the negligent party. So the lion's share of responsibility for the injury typically will rest with the negligent party that caused the incident, mm-hmm. or the incident in the first place. And I would, you know, normally the apportionment is sort of 75-25 against the negligent driver. So in other words, if someone's not wearing a helmet, and if they can establish with medical legal evidence that the failure to wear the helmet actually contributed to the injury, and you know, that's usually the evidence of a neurologist or that kind of expertise, then you know the exposure the cyclist faces is usually a reduction of their damages by 25-30%.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you as well about what you think are the most common mistaken assumptions that cyclists have in this context.
In the context of helmet use or just accidents in general?
Just accidents or crashes, as I like to call them.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of crashes occur because cyclists assume that drivers see them. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about the law is that the law says you are entitled to assume that other users of the roadway will obey the laws of the roadway. So if you're proceeding with a right-of-way as a cyclist, and let's say a car leaves a stop sign, you don't have to anticipate that. And if you fail to anticipate that, you're not going to be found liable at law. The problem is that doesn't really help you in an orthopedic trauma unit. You know, mm-hmm. yes, you do have a good case at law, but are you really going to, you know, as a cyclist, always make an assumption that people see you just because you can legally? Practically, if you do that, you're going to find that you're going to be involved in accidents, and that's one of the mistakes cyclists tend to make.
I'm also kind of wondering too about the assumptions that cyclists make about the law.
That's a spectrum. I mean, I think a lot of cyclists assume, you know, that the law won't help them, or that the, you know, so-called system won't help them. And certainly there are, I think, systemic biases against cyclists. I think we do still tend to live in a motoring culture where cyclists are regarded by a lot of people as a nuisance.
Or as a fringe group.
As a fringe group, yeah, like a radical group. I mean, I think that's changing, obviously, with the increasing popularity of cycling. But, you're always going to get sort of a spectrum of opinions about what the law can do for cyclists. I think the law, in some respects, has done a lot. There was a case a few years back where a cyclist was proceeding through an intersection and was struck by someone making a left turn, and the trial judge said, well, you know, I think cyclists owe a higher duty to themselves because they're more vulnerable, and that was overturned by the Court of Appeal, which said, no, that doesn't work. It doesn't work mm-hmm. that way at all. In fact, cyclists enjoy the same rights and obligations that motorists do at law, so they don't have a higher duty of care to themselves based on the fact that they're more vulnerable. So, you know, it's cases like that that really move the law forward for cyclists. The legislature hasn't really done a lot for cyclists, you know, since, well, for 12 years now, there hasn't really been a statute that relates to cyclists. And so while the municipalities are busy changing infrastructure and doing what they can, and I think the city of Vancouver has done a pretty reasonable job relative to a lot of other municipalities, and at least trying to cope with, you know, an increasing cyclist population given, you know, the limitations of our present infrastructure. But that the problem there, though, is that the government of, like the provincial government hasn't addressed, you know, for example, the meaning of bike lanes. So there's no real legislation on what a lot of these new developments mean. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a good thing. I was sort of reflecting on that today, is that, you know, I'm quite secure in the common law. You know, we have a fairly sound English common law system, and the system of negligence has been around, you know, for 800 years. It's developed, and those, you know, those principles have developed. The statutes are the rules, whereas the common law is the principle. And I guess my concern, if the legislature did finally get around to addressing, you know, cycling and the nature of bike lanes and what bike lanes mean and what a cyclist should do in particular circumstances, they might get it wrong, and that might not be specifically for the benefit of cyclists. So tough to say, but the one thing is clear, there's been no sort of legislative pronouncement, no statutes that pertain specifically to cyclists since, you know, the amendments to the Motor Vehicle Act in 96. So they haven't really kept up, and maybe they're just seeing, you know, how it all progresses.
So at this point, cyclists have the same rights whether they're riding in the bike lane or not, and motorists have the same responsibilities whether they're driving in a regular lane or if they, for example, if a motorist parks in a bike lane,
mm-hmm.
There's no differentiation as far as the law is concerned, right? It's still just regular old illegal parking.
Well, no. I think that there tends to be an understanding. I mean, if a cyclist is hit in a bike lane, you fall back on general principles of foreseeability. It's more foreseeable than not that a cyclist would be in a bike lane. So the motorist has a higher duty of care around bike lanes, and that's what I mean by sort of the principles of common law still apply to those situations.
Okay.
And so, that has changed. I mean, the presence of bike lanes, you know, I mean, it's a subject of some controversy in terms of how effective they are, but certainly at law, if you're within those two painted lines, you're in much better shape.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that, you know, there tends to be a lot of confusion around passing on the right and what a cyclist can do in those circumstances. One thing is certain: a cyclist can pass in a bike lane, stopped vehicles to the cyclist's left, and so, you know, everyone seems to accept that when there's no bike lane and a cyclist is passing on the right. Then, you know, insurers get quite excited about that because they think there's a general prohibition against it, which, of course, there isn't in this province.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it as long as you do it safely because that the distance between parked vehicles and vehicles in the lane to your left, that's considered an unobstructed lane of travel for purposes of that provision of the Act, which says, you know, you can do it in an unobstructed lane of travel. So, but the nice thing with a bike lane is everybody kind of gets that if you're hitting a bike lane, you know, it's probably the motorist's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes the question of liability a lot easier.
And so just to clarify about passing then, if you are, you're saying if you're riding in a bike lane, passing on the right is fine. If you're riding, if there is no bike lane, is passing to the left and passing to the right seen as somewhat interchangeable?
Well,
legally,
if there's no bike lane, then, you know, what does the cyclist do?
Mm-hmm.
We all face the situation of cyclists where, you know, riding down the road and there's traffic to the left and there's a red light ahead and that traffic starts to come to a stop and there's, you know, 30 vehicles in front of us all queuing for the light. Do you stop as soon as, you know, the vehicle immediately adjacent to you stops? I don't think so. I mean, I think that's kind of absurd to expect the cyclist to sort of stop mid-block and not proceed. And I think the Court of Appeal has addressed that and said, no, no, the distance between those cars, that lane of vehicles and parked vehicles, is an unobstructed lane of travel that you can use as long as you do it safely. And I think the Court of Appeal in the decision I'm speaking about sort of reserve discretion in the trial judge to interpret each case on its own facts. You know, so in other words, safely usually means speed. What you can't do is just, you know, boot it at full speed, you know, in what we call that unobstructed lane of travel, which again is the distance between parked cars and the lane next to you. If you do that, you're in trouble.
I'd like to ask you as well about a few areas. One would be taking the lane and how that's received in the courts. I mean, I know obviously it's something that legally cyclists are allowed to do if riding to, you know, you ride as safe to the right as long as it's safe to do so and not obstructed. Actually taking the lane, when it comes to court, how is that treated generally?
Well, I mean, I think each case is different. Mm. And I need to emphasize that, you know, trials are a subjective process. I mean, judges do their best to apply the principles of the common law and the statute at issue. And the statute at issue in a case like that might be, you know, the cyclists are required to ride as near as practicable to the right side of the road. If an accident occurs and it's caused directly or indirectly as a result of you being in the middle of the lane. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if a motorist said, well, I couldn't foresee that they would take the whole lane, you know, there may be something there if in the circumstances that was not as near as practicable. That doesn't concern me all that much. It certainly doesn't concern me if that has no causal relationship to what occurred. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always tell people, look, you can be riding on a sidewalk, and then, you know, and that's illegal in most areas in the municipality. But if an accident occurs a minute later on the roadway and has nothing to do with what you were doing a minute earlier, then that causal connection's broken.
Right.
Right? It's completely irrelevant what you were doing here. It's like I shot the sheriff, but I didn't shoot the deputy. I mean, you know, it's not. So there's got to be a causal connection between what you do wrong and the injury.
Okay.
You know, to give rise to a case against you in contributory negligence.
Now, we don't have too much time left, so there's a couple of really important things I'd really like to hear your perspective on. And one is what cyclists should do, just basic, some basic things to remember if you get into a crash or if you get into some kind of accident or altercation. What are the things that people should remember to do?
Well, one of the problems with what we do as lawyers and what judges attempt to do is that, you know, we take an event and we reconstruct it. You know, we put it under a microscope and we, you know, examine people for discovery. And, you know, we cross-examine people on events which occurred sometimes 2 and 3 years earlier. And I don't know about you, but I can't remember. You know, if you ask me to list, you know, 12 things I did last week without reference to my calendar, I would, you know, that might be a bit challenging. I don't know. So, you know, and so lawyers are asking you to go back 2 years and, you know, tell me, you know, exactly where you were when you first saw the vehicle. Okay, what was the exact distance, or how much time elapsed between when you first saw the vehicle and the impact? And, you know, everything happens in those in accidents very quickly, as we all know. So I guess what I'm saying in response to your question, the best thing is to have a perfectly accurate memory. And so if you're in an accident and you're capable of sort of recording what happened, as crazy as that sounds, you know, it's great to take pictures, even with, you know, a phone. Mm-hmm. Or a camera, but it's also good to get names, particularly of independent witnesses. And it's also good to try to talk to the police if they're at the scene. What tends to happen, unfortunately, with cyclists is that they're the ones that are hurt when they're involved in a collision with a car. So they're carried away in an ambulance, and the driver is left at the scene with all sorts of opportunity to persuade the police that, you know, it happened this way, and sort of reconstructs the accident to his or her benefit. So really you want to get as accurate a picture or a reconstruction as you can immediately after the accident occurs, and even if that's, you know, making notes of your best memory as you lay in your hospital bed. It sounds crass and opportunistic and everything else and claims conscious, but you know the reality is your memory is going to fade. And
I think it sounds smart, and I think people have to also protect themselves and remember that the motorist may themselves make a claim. So if you have that information at your disposal, then you'll be in great shape.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just good to have a pen and paper on hand. Obviously, a phone with a camera or a camera is good.
Mm-hmm. Get some phone numbers.
Definitely get the plate number. There's an onus on cyclists and all victims of hit and run to do everything they can reasonably do in their shoes. You know, it's sort of an objective, subjective test. It's what would the reasonable person do in the shoes of the plaintiff?
But right.
There's an onus, a statutory onus on people to do what they can to identify, you know, the person that hit them. So try to get the plate number, but if you can't do that, you have to take immediate steps to get advice as to what you need to do to discharge that onus, because the mistake a lot of people think is that, you know, there's someone out there looking after you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somehow the system will make all of this work. And to an extent, the system can work quite well, but the progenitor of the information or the people that, you know, really need to be responsible for the development of the information are the cyclists themselves right from the get-go.
Right. And we should also maybe just say, just before we fade out here, that I know a lot of cyclists think that if they're at fault in a crash, then they have no recourse, but that's not correct, is it?
That's not correct. No, they have a full entitlement to no-fault benefits, which consists of temporary total disability benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And also reasonable rehab expenses. So, you know, they've got a fair, as a statutory insured person under the Act, they have a fair amount of recourse to wage loss benefits and medical expenses.
Well, David, this has been a real pleasure, and I think we're going to have you on again.
Happy to, but only if you play Woody Guthrie.
Absolutely. We play him. It would be my pleasure, and I would feel, you know, to fulfill that obligation, it would be absolutely a pleasure. So, this has been David Hay. You can also read many more of his words that are published regularly in Momentum magazine. And you can do you have a website or anything or contact info you'd like to give?
dhay@rbs.ca, and then, of course, the Richards Buell Sutton website. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David.
My pleasure.
Ride safe.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. Coming up next, a stereoscopic readout hosted by Darren G. And this has been the Pedal Revolutionary Show. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Happy Bike Month.
I know a little lawyer in a certain town who got the name of Snoop from always snooping round. He was the most peculiar man I've ever seen. I'll give you a description of the man I mean. Snoop the lawyer never wore a collar. Snoop the lawyer charged an awful price. Snoop the lawyer never spent a dollar, and no one ever took a bit of his advice. A wifey and a husband never could agree. She said he wants to take the child away from me. Snoopy said, give him the child and you'll be free. A girl like you can make a baby out of me. When Henry Ford got into court, he rubbed his chin. Snoopy was his lawyer who said with a grin, there isn't any reason why you shouldn't win when you could make a million from a hunk of tin. Snoop, the lawyer, never wore a collar. Snoop, the lawyer, got charged an awful price. Seuss, the lawyer, never spent a dollar, and no one ever took a bit of his advice. A lady with $1 million said, "Dear me, I'd like to marry, but I'm over 83. She went to Snoop the lawyer for his sympathy. He married her and took $1 million for his fee. A burlesque show came into town the other day, and when it left, the girls took half the town away. They put old Snoop the lawyer on the girlie's track. His wife, he sent detectives out to bring him back. Snoop the lawyer never wore a collar. Snoop the lawyer charged an awful price. Snoop, the lawyer, never spent a dollar, and no one ever took a bit of his...
Oh! Oh, yes! Yeah, yeah, yeah!
Hi-ya! You're listening to C...
Oh, yeah!
I...
Hi-ya!
T...
Hi-ya!
R...
Woo-hoo!
101.9, Vancouver.
God damn it, baby, no, I ain't lying to you! I'm only gonna tell you one time. Ah, yeah.
A groin-grabbingly great station.
When it is done.